Hey, Frank, we're out of menus.
Coming right up.
You are about to witness a revolution in business communications. At just one touch of a button, you can add photographs to anything, from memos to menus. Anyone can do it. Any business can afford it. Introducing the Apple One-Step Scanning System.
Hey, this is nice.
Thank you.
It's a better way to make yourself understood.
Okay. Here we go. Hello, and welcome to the Coldcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, his steamy Snapchats are so hot, they'll make your Samsung Galaxy explode even faster than it otherwise would. Buster Heine is here.
Hello.
You like that zinger I just mixed in there?
Oh, yeah. So
sick
good.
Burn. That was a sick burn. Also joining us, like others with an ASMR fetish, you may find him creeping around the library, getting his jollies from the cacophony of whispers. Leander Caney is with us.
A library creeper, yeah.
Sick. Where you'll find so me. Sick. Haven't you been banned from all the San Francisco County libraries?
No, not yet. But I found some new ASMR videos.
Did you? Yeah. I heard that the library had your, you know, a picture of your face up and said, "Do not let this man hear you whisper."
Yeah, like
consequences.
Like the FBI posted the post office. So. ASMR freaks.
So, what's your new ASMR?
I can't remember the name of it, but I found one. Oh. It's like a massage one, I think. It's quite good.
Okay. What do you mean a massage one?
Well, they do these massages and then talking to this really weird microphone with two rubber ears on either side.
Uh-huh.
They're made out of white rubber.
So it duplicates what your ears do to your brain or something?
It must do. I didn't have a chance to really check it out and look into it, but yeah, it must be something like that. It looks really, really bizarre and weird. And of course, it picks up every tiny little pen drop. But this one was quite good. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, yeah, look at those ears. They're so big.
Well, I don't actually watch them. I just open it up in a tab and then I put it on my headphones so I don't see what's going on the actual video.
Have you ever listened to like multiple ASMRs at one time, or is it just like one at a time?
Funny you should mention that. I actually had two or three going this morning. Yeah, and I had to hunt through 150 tabs to find out, close a couple down.
So you've got like several people whispering to you at the same time.
Yeah, it didn't have the right effect. It was too much of a cacophony.
How did I just guess that, by the way? I just happened to have guessed you were doing that. That's how you know your fetish has gone to the next level, when you're listening to three videos at once. Because one doesn't do it for you anymore. You got to crack open three or four while you're at the library.
That was actually an accident. I prefer one.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, we've got some great, tasty stuff to talk about with you guys this week. We want to spend some time talking about the announcements that Google made this week. And I know you're like, oh, man, why are you talking about Google stuff? Well, I think this is relevant to what Apple is going to be doing as well. So this is kind of like the future, I think, of all technology companies. And I'm curious to hear what you guys think about Apple strategy in this regard. Also, we've got three new iPad Pros coming in early spring, according to one new report. And some of you may be happy with some of the news we're going to be bringing you about the iPad Mini. And if you stay tuned to the end, we're going to be talking about apps, man. We haven't talked about apps in a long time. And we've got some juicy ones for you. See, these are some that I think are going to be
life-changing,
super useful.
Oh.
And in fact, mine's free. And it's one of the best apps, I think, on the Mac. Before we jump into our first story, let me go ahead and say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Squarespace makes it so simple to build a beautiful website quickly that is going to look great on any device that visits. You can build a blog. You can build a website for your business. You can build a website that features your artwork or photography. It's so easy to do. You don't need to know how to code. Everything is drag and drop. And your site will look completely individual because the tools that Squarespace gives you allows you to customize virtually everything. So your site's going to look totally different from everyone else's. It's going to look custom, but you're not going to have to custom code it. And get this, if you want to start an e-commerce site that's included with your Squarespace subscription, And Squarespace just flipped the switch on Apple Pay. So if you want to accept Apple Pay and give iOS users an easy way to pay for their products on your e-commerce site, it is literally as easy as clicking a checkbox and you are set, ready to accept Apple Pay. And making it easier for iOS people to pay you is going to help you get paid by more people. You can get started at squarespace.com. I always say build a website. You get a 2-week free trial. You can just go in there, play around with it, build a site. If you decide after 2 weeks you want to continue your service, you can use code CULTCAST at checkout. You'll save 10% off any order. And if you order a year of service, you get a free domain name. That is squarespace.com. The code is CULTCAST. Oh, man. I don't want to pit Android against iOS people. You know, I always try to avoid doing this because I don't want to be that guy. But we have to at least mention this. So y'all know by now that the galaxies have been exploding. And people are losing limbs. People are catching fire. And Samsung has been replacing the Galaxy Notes with new Galaxy Notes. Well, now a new one, the one that they replaced, the one that was supposed to solve all the problems, that one just exploded on an airplane.
Dude, hilarious.
Well, we should mention no one was injured, and the plane was on the ground, so.
Yeah, it was at the gate, so it was fine. Everybody got out safely.
It's okay to poke a little fun at.
But it could have been, you know, a bad thing if it was mid-flight, you know.
Have you ever seen the movie Aliens?
No, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. You have, of course. Leander has. This is a popular movie, Buster.
I know. Sorry, man.
So one of the great things about the aliens is that when you shoot them, like, their blood is acidic, so, like, comes out and, like, it, like, melts everything around them, right? So it makes it hard to, like, destroy them. So check this out. Here's what happened to this guy on this Southwest Airlines flight. The owner of the Galaxy Note said he got the new phone from AT&T, and before the flight left the gate, he powered it down and put it in his pocket, and then it started smoking. Can you imagine if you're this guy? Like with the heightened state of, like, people, you know, scared about terrorism, like, you're sitting on a plane and all of a sudden your pocket starts smoking.
You look to your left and the guy
next to you, his pocket is smoking, right? What would you do?
I'd attack that fool, man.
So this thick gray-green smoke starts pouring out of the device, after which he drops it on the floor, and in a matter of moments, it had burned through the plane's carpet. Just like in the Aliens movie, Leander. You know, when you shoot them and all of a sudden the floor starts melting.
Yeah, yeah, right. They just leave it on the plane, smoking through the burning through the hole.
Dude, I would imagine that's exactly what they did. Because they don't know if it's a bomb or if it's just a malfunctioning device.
Didn't Captain Sully burst out of the cockpit with a fire extinguisher and just extinguish the whole thing?
He ripped his shirt off, exposing his muscular physique below. He has a perfect six-pack. Right. And then he dived on top of it to cover his fellow passengers from the explosion.
It's the way to do
but it. All he got was a third-degree burn.
But they're going to make a movie out of it, though. So.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be like 3 or 4 hours long. Major action movie. Arnold Schwarzenegger is playing Captain Sully. Everybody get out of the plane. It's going to blow. This is just unreal. And I wonder if the new Samsungs are having issues just like the old ones. This is a major bad press situation for Samsung, right? Like, the new one that was supposed to solve the problem is blowing up. But there is one bright side to the story, is the army has determined that they can actually use these on the field in battle. They'll just take the Samsung Galaxy Note, they dial a phone number, hit send, and once it connects, they just toss the phone into the trench, and it just blows up. So Samsung has discovered they have a whole new market avenue with these phones that's actually even more profitable than selling to consumers, right? Because you can sell them to the army for like $1,500 each because they explode. Shout out to at Gary_86 on Instagram for sending me that pic. There's actually a pic of it on Instagram that was hilarious. But
did a mod in GTA 5, Grand Theft Auto. You can, you know, use a Galaxy phone as a Note phone as a bomb.
Can you really?
Yeah. So exactly that scenario.
This is now not a mod the in press Grand Theft you Auto. Want. Not the kind of press that you want. All right. Well, speaking of hardware that will probably explode, let's move on to Google. So they've got some new hardware for your home. We knew Google was probably going to release some new smart home devices, and an Apple probably in the future is also going to release some smart home devices. So, Buster, what do we get here? We got a brand new 4K Chromecast.
Oh, yeah. Don't you use a Chromecast?
Yeah, I love the Chromecast. This one is also almost two times faster than the old one. But, you know, the thing about 4K is it's still so early for 4K. I mean, right. Everyone's selling 4K televisions, but there's literally no 4K content.
Yeah.
I mean, you can watch some 4K Netflix, but they're not selling 4K movies at the stores or anything. There's still a lot of people watching DVDs.
People buy DVDs?
Yeah, people still buy DVDs. And then they also released a Google Home device. It's a lot like Amazon's Echo smart speaker, except the Google Home device is powered by Google Assistant. Buster, what did you think about this gadget?
I think I would still get an Echo. Yeah, it looked interesting, and like the Google Assistant stuff looks really cool, but it doesn't have a lot of third-party support yet. It only had like Philips Hue and like maybe five others, and then they're going to add more at the end of the year and stuff. So the Echo Dot still looks like it's way ahead of the competition as far as that goes.
But you know what? Leander's going to argue with me here. I have an Echo. I've been using an Echo for, I don't know, 8 months now. And I don't really find that it integrates with that much either. I mean, they say it integrates with a ton of stuff, but the integrations I've seen have really not been useful and are things that you would probably never use. So I only use it to turn on the lights in my house. So it has Hue support, just like the Google Home does. And then it's good for asking very specific questions, like what's the weather, what's 5 times 5, you know, stuff like that.
Really hard.
Why am I so bad at math? You know, questions like that. Other than that, I don't really find the Echo to really be that useful either. And especially, it's not convenient at all for anything that remotely resembles a complex interaction, where if you need to gather any type of information, let's say you're making a purchase decision or you're trying to decide what movie to see or something that requires you to do some discovery. Oh, man. And it's not the Amazon Echo that's bad at this. Just voice interaction in general, I think, is terrible. And it kind of makes me wonder, Leander, you tell me if I'm wrong about this. Like, it kind of makes me wonder if this whole voice interaction model with these devices that live in your home are kind of like 3D television of our day and age.
Yeah, you think it's going to be a flash in 3 years,
it's going to just totally be gone. Yeah.
I don't think so. No, my experience with the Echo was, you know, tells me that I think it's going to be a mainstream interface. Like I said, if the functionality, like a lot of the Amazon functionality is a bit weird. It's like there's a lot of sort of, there's a whole mishmash of stuff. In fact, there's so much now, it's almost impossible to remember what you can do with it. Mm-hmm. In fact, I just discovered Siri the other day. I couldn't remember where my car was. And so Lewis said, hey, ask your phone. And I was like, for a joke, I said, Lewis, Siri, where's my car? I came up with it because it's, you know, got that new feature in iOS 10.
Well, does your car connect directly with?
No, it just remembers when you. It knows when you've been driving and when you park, and it remembers the last look. You know, when you stop, when you pull up.
Oh, I actually didn't know that. Interesting.
It's a new feature in iOS 10, and so I was, you know, it was pleasantly surprised, and I think, I don't know, you know, like it's a question of sort of knowing what you can do with it. I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing about the Amazon is that I think its speech recognition is really remarkably good.
Oh my gosh. That cannot be overstated. It's amazing. It's the best voice recognition I have ever used on any product. It will understand you across an entire house, even with background noise going on.
Music
playing,
is
uncanny how good it is.
Right. And it tends to understand exactly what you say. So not as many errors as Siri, I think. I think Siri is probably the bottom of the pack, to be honest. Lewis and I were playing around with it with the Google app here, and we were comparing it to Siri and to Amazon to the Echo, and you know, the Google one was the best by far. We were asking it like, what is the mother of Satan? That's a good test question.
That's a great question.
Ask Siri what the mother of Satan is, and then ask Amazon Dot what it is, and only Google came up with it. And so, you know, and Lewis is really like bullish on Google, saying that like the smarts of Google services are so much better. and they're so much more intelligent. And the stuff that you can ask Google is much smarter than you can ask Amazon or Siri. Siri's kind of okay for commands, you know, setting timers or asking where your car is and stuff like that. But, you know, for complex searches or for, you know, getting information, Google's much better, in his opinion. I haven't played with it that much, but, you know, so he thinks it's the best of both worlds. It has, like, Alexa's pretty good speech recognition, great speech recognition, with a lot more smarts than Siri has.
Do you still think that Apple's heading the same direction? Like, they might come out with their own smart home hub? We've talked about this before, well, and there have been rumors that they might be working on something.
Yeah,
like
they've tried that HomeKit thing, and I, you know, the home app, and like you, like, I don't have that much smart stuff around the house to integrate, right? So I try to integrate Nest, and of course, it didn't work, and that's about it. That's all I've got. So so there wasn't a lot of chance to experiment around with this stuff, but you know, I think like the idea that. You know, to interact with it, you've still got to open up an app, or you've got to pull up on your Apple TV. The Apple TV is a good idea, but it's not doesn't have that always listening microphone. And I think it's going to be a natural. I mean, you know, like it's there's something very natural, very easy about just sort of barking out orders in the air. If you can get you know something like the you know the Amazon, you know if you can get a device to actually listen and then follow through on the commands, it's great. It's a really superb way to interact. With a smart home, and the same with a car too. You know, like it's perfectly natural in the car, like to call out, to get it to change, play a song, change to a certain radio channel. You know, start a phone call, send a text. The voice is the natural way to do it, and I think his voice is actually the natural way to do it in the house too. Much more natural than picking up an iPad or an iPhone and fiddling around with an app.
I feel like fiddling around with an app, though, in some instances, is just a lot faster and more efficient.
Well,
and better than
voice. Because you've been used to that, I think, because you're accustomed to it. But, you know, once you get, like, I you know, I use the Echo for, not for that many things, but for some stuff. And, you know, it's become second nature. So, like, setting a timer, setting an alarm. You know, if you've got cooking something, if you're in the kitchen, playing a song. I, by far, prefer to use my voice to play a song than I do to go over and start tapping away on an iPad screen. Like, I saw one good piece of criticism I read about voice interfaces is that often you'll want to see, like, if you're doing, like, a search, for example, you'll want the results presented visually. Like, you'll ask it something. You say, hey, you know, what are the flights to L.A., you know, tomorrow? And you don't want to hear, they don't have it list off, you know, 40 different flights
right.
to you one after the other. You'd want to see a list, and you know there's a few examples of that too. But I think for commands and for getting things done, you know you don't need to see a screen. Telling the machine to do something is I think you know best done by voice. And almost
that, I agree with you there. I mean, if you know exactly what you want to do, I think commands is the perfect word. If you have a command. If you want to be commanding, it's right. good to have that digital assistant that will do your bidding. Then it's great. But to your point about searching, voice is terrible for shopping. Amazon has this huge initiative to push. They're trying to push Amazon shopping, and it's terrible because you're asking for products. You're trying to figure out what you're even buying and what the different product versions are, why they're different prices. And what the differences are between them.
Yeah.
And there's just no good way to do that with voice. I think you have to have a visual representation when you're trying to buy something online.
Right. Yeah. You wouldn't want to use it for that. But, you know, we were talking about the smart home. And I mean, what were we talking about originally? Apple, you know, Google stuff.
Google Home. Yeah.
I think, you know, the use case scenarios, they have this video. It's totally cheesy. I think it does present, you know, like a fair few situations that do seem realistic and do seem, you know, like actually quite natural for a device like that. You know, waking people up and looking for information about, you know, the morning commute or whatever, you know, the weather conditions, that kind of stuff. You know, I think it looks pretty compelling. I'm really keen to check it out.
Actually, your example, waking people up, that introduces an interesting idea in that if you had multiple devices, let's say Apple releases their own version of this Google Home, right? And you have multiple devices connected to it, you could do all sorts of things that you weren't able to do before. Like you could say, wake my kids up at 7 a.m., right?
Yeah,
and it goes and sets reminders on their phones.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you could say, hey, where's my wife's iPad? And it would, you know, ping that iPad so you could go find it. And Buster, you wrote a piece this week about Apple doing something that that is pretty much what I just described. And I guess the piece mentioned ambient paradigm, which I don't even know what that means.
The ambient paradigm.
But isn't it kind of like the idea that all these devices are going to be interacting with each other
in ways
they don't now?
Yeah, you're surrounded by devices that are always on, always connected, and you know, always talking to each other to make your life easier.
And that's an interesting concept. And these analysts who put out this report, they said they believe this is where Apple is heading and this is the future of what Apple's going to be doing, right?
Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, it looks like, you know, Google's going there, obviously, and Amazon is too. Where Apple, I think, has the advantage is the iPhone is still the computer in your pocket everywhere you go. So, I don't know. Do you think, like, an Alexa can't, or an Echo Dot, it can't completely replace your iPhone or anything? So I still think they're going to have a lot of advantages in that area.
Yeah, I think that voice is going to be secondary to a main device.
Right.
You know, I don't think it's ever going to take over for your iPad or your iPhone or something.
It'll do like most of the heavy lifting and stuff that you need.
It might help you do stuff without having to get your iPhone out of your pocket. But of course, with the AirPods coming out, having that connection directly to Siri, I mean, that's going to make it so much more convenient. If you could just have one little thing in your ear. Again, it's like, for those of you that have seen the movie Her, which if you haven't seen it, you should, because it's a great movie. The guy wears a little earpiece. Everyone does. It's like this imaginary society in the future, and everyone wears these little things in their pocket, and they carry around a little computer in their pocket, and they wear a little earpiece in their ear, I should say. And then they just talk to this thing that lives in their pocket, and this thing that lives in their pocket is connected to the broader world. It's like the Internet of Things. And so they're able to accomplish all these things just through natural conversation. And then every once in a while, they have to get this device out of their pocket because it has a screen on it and they can look at, you know, different things and interact with the device in ways that aren't natural to voice interaction. And then they put it back in their pocket and they walk around with this earpiece in their ear for, you know, the rest of the day. It's actually a fascinating, imaginative view of the future. And maybe this is exactly where we're heading, because if Apple releases a device that lives in your home, connects to all your other devices, and all your other devices can talk to each other, and you can start controlling all these different devices. That is a compelling vision for the future, I think, because controlling stuff with voice is super cool. Like, when I come home and I can tell Echo to turn on my lights, isn't it? It's kind of magical, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but you're flip-flopping all over the place. You're just saying it was really useless.
No. I'm being consistent. I'm saying that command-based stuff is really useful. It's the broader perspective that I'm not sure is going to work. Like, if you're trying to do search and you're trying to do shopping and that type of stuff, I just don't think voice is ever going to be that good for that.
Right. Well, there's actually, one of the problems that Apple has with it, you know, that, you know, the whole her scenario is that its AI is you know, they're very, very cognizant of the privacy aspects. And to get a good AI, you've got to know a lot about what a person does, what their preferences are, where they go, and Google, of course, is collecting all this information and uploading it to its servers. And so, you know, it's a vast repository of everything you're doing, and it serves to make, I think, a good AI, especially across devices, because that information is sitting on a Google central servers. Whereas, like, you know, a good example is like Apple's Photos app, right? You know, it does all this photo recognition, and people have been complaining that. It runs on the Mac and it recognizes all the faces on the Mac, but then it has to run locally on your phone and do the same facial recognition using the phone, because they're not uploading that information up into Apple servers. It's all stored locally, and so people were suggesting that even for facial recognition, Apple should be able to share this that data across, you know, using something like iCloud, and protected and encrypted. But, you know, Apple's privacy stance is such that it's trying to collect as little information as possible, or at least, you know, send as little information as possible over the airwaves. It's all, you know, localized on the, and kept stored securely on the local device, which sort of sets up, a problem for itself, I think. It's not taking any shortcuts anyway.
It's a strength and a weakness. I mean, Google collects all that data. They're able to analyze all that data and do stuff with that data and learn from that data. But even though that makes them more intelligent, perhaps, I don't know if I would want to have a Google Home at my house. Because you know Google is collecting all that stuff about you and using it.
Right, exactly.
In some way. Right? I mean, everybody knows that. That's Google's business. They give you services for free so they can learn about you and then use those services to or use that information to market to you. And I'm not even one of these guys in the tinfoil hats who lives in the concrete bunker who's like, I don't want any of my data out there, right? I'm not Edward Snowden. I don't really care if Google reads some of my emails. But there is a line, I think, and that line is probably a very personal thing for everybody, and it's different for everybody. And for me, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Having a device from Google in my house listening to all of my conversations, I doubt it's listening when you're not asking an active question. But the fact that every time you ask a question, Google's going to analyze that and store that.
Well, Google's not Google's not listening, but the NSA definitely is.
Yeah, that's right. Google's like, they wipe their hands. They're like, right. we don't monitor, but we did give the NSA an on switch, the secret software on switch, right?
Yeah.
People laugh about that stuff and they talk about conspiracies. But I mean, the news about Yahoo was out this week, right? Scanning all those emails just to do exactly what we just described, to give information about you to the government. I mean, it's happening. And so, I don't know, even with the Echo in my house, I was kind of a little bit worried about that. But I don't think Amazon does anything with that besides try to sell you more Kindles.
Right, yeah, exactly. But, yeah, but it's a good point, though. I mean, in fact, Buster, didn't you just write a story today about how an ex... government contractors telling you how you can hack into the Mac's iPhone and phone and microphone and camera, yeah?
Right, yeah. So, yeah, you never know who's going to be listening.
Dude, Mark Zuckerberg keeps a piece of tape across his EyeSight camera.
Yeah, that's about the only way to make sure that you're not going to get watched. And even then, who knows? Maybe they have some special tech that can see through your black tape.
Yeah, and it's not just the NSA you want to be worried about either. It's right. Hackers too. I mean, if you have all the smart home stuff, you don't want. Brian Krebs, right? Krebs Against Security runs this popular and well-respected website. He's been writing about these hacking groups, and so his site came under attack a couple of weeks ago, didn't it? But a huge giant DDoS denial of service attack, and it was run from all of these hacked IoT devices. You know, locks and cameras and light bulbs.
You're kidding.
No, it was like, and it was one of the biggest DDoS
attacks. That's literally the end of Terminator 3. That's exactly what happens. All the devices, like the mundane, totally benign devices, churn on people.
Right, and this is exactly what happened. The security is so piss poor that they, they're easily hacked and they're all connected to the internet, so they can easily be turned into these... into these little zombie, devices that were sending, trying to log into Krebs' site and brought it down. And in fact, it's so bad. They were saying it was one of the biggest attacks on the that we've seen on the internet. And he had agreements with Akamai and some other, giant CDN type service providers. And they had to drop him because it was just crippling their services.
Wow.
And it's hugely expensive too, because all the bandwidth it eats up. But I talked to who was it? Elgato. They're a Dutch company that's been working with HomeKit, and they promised some products I think at CES, and they when they finally came here it was like a few months later, and I was like, what happened? These things are supposed to be coming out sooner and earlier in the year, and they said, well, the security that Apple is requiring us to build in is unprecedented. It's crazy. Everything's like 256 AES encryptions standards, all the signaling, and I was like, is that
to be HomeKit certified?
Yeah, to be HomeKit certified. And so and they said that Apple's taking security really, really seriously because they don't want anyone hacking into your camera and then opening up all your locks when you're away on vacation or at the movie theater for the night and clearing out all your house, which is a scenario that's only too plausible. So, they're saying that Apple is probably I think that they said that the security was the most secure they'd seen, and that they were making sure from the, from the bottom up that they were taking security really, really seriously. So everything, all the messaging is all, super encrypted, super secure, can't be hacked, nothing can be intercepted. And I think it looks it, they I think people were complaining about HomeKit and HomeKit adoption, but now it looks foresightful.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about all the things in it. My house is probably more connected than many others, maybe not listening to this show, but a lot of people don't have any smart devices in their house at all. And I have all these devices that could, relay my video, relay audio to the internet. I mean, I have a thermostat that controls temperature. I have a security camera with voice and audio or voice and video. I've got an Xbox Kinect, which can watch my living room. I want to get a smart lock. I mean, if you start thinking about all things in your house that are going to be connected to the internet, this really could be a huge problem. And you have all these different companies managing the security protocols for all these various devices. It makes for an exponential increase in hackability.
Yeah, right. I would imagine. And like I said, it's all those like sort of helper apps. I mean, you know, we've got the system here at the office, like SmartThings, which is made by Samsung. They were a startup which Samsung bought. But to connect anything, to connect a lot of things to it, you have to get a helper. You have to get like a third-party app. So some cameras, we've got some D-Link cameras. And you have to connect the cameras to the D-Link app and then connect the D-Link app to the SmartThings app. And who knows? You know, it's like you said, it's like a long chain of all these potential vulnerabilities that could.
It's like the Wild West right now.
Yeah, yeah, and it's kind of really flaky and fragile. It's really frustrating, you know. Like stuff is constantly going offline. Things don't respond. I set the alarms off this morning when I opened the door, you know, because it didn't pick up on my phone, mm-hmm. which is supposed to turn off automatically. That happens quite frequently. Yeah, it's kind of a headache.
I know. There's built-in failure for all this stuff. I mean, even my Mac no longer is unlocked by my Apple Watch. Well, actually, right. actually, that's not true. It is working again now, not due to anything that I did, because I have absolutely no idea how to fix it. But you know, you can unlock your Mac with your Apple Watch if you're running watchOS 3 and macOS Sierra, and it was working flawlessly for like a week and a half maybe, and then it just stopped working for no good reason. And it's like, oh man. If Apple can't get this right, who can, right?
Right.
Because they're putting in an enormous amount of effort to make sure things like this are rock solid.
Yeah, yeah. And this is such a widespread problem. I see so many complaints about it. People were saying that what you have to do is you have to delete, you have to go to iCloud and delete your phone, and then reset up your phone.
Really?
Yeah, but I was like, Hell no.
See, I saw like one person said you need to hold your breath and drink a glass of water. Another guy said that you need to have someone try to scare you. So I don't know what to believe. But it somehow resolved itself, and today it was working for the most part. It stopped working twice though already today, so I don't know. But the more you have all these smart home devices, you know, at your house, the more you're opening yourself up to major frustration when your locks stop working or your cameras don't work or something like that. Before we move on, let me say thank you to Casper for supporting this episode. Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress, and they sell it directly to consumers, which eliminates commission-driven inflated prices. And its award-winning sleep surface was developed in-house, has a sleek design, and is delivered in a small, how did they do that, sized box. And in addition to the mattress, Casper also offers an adaptive pillow, soft, breathable sheets, and now they offer a dog bed. The Casper designed dog bed is made from the exact same materials as the human bed. And like the human bed, you get the same 100-night trial. So you can try the human bed or the dog bed for 100 nights, and if you aren't thrilled with it, they will pick up the item and refund 100% of your money to you. And they have the dog mattresses in 3 different sizes, depending on the size of your dog. And they said they went through 110 different prototypes trying to determine like how dogs lay on beds so that it would be the most comfortable for your dog. Because, you know, dogs are weird. Buster, you have a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dogs don't lay on things the way that humans lay on things.
Well, and they're always shifting, and yeah.
And so you want your dog to be comfortable. So now you have those two options, and people love Casper beds. I always tell people, go check out the reviews online. Go read them on Amazon. You can read the reviews on Casper's sites. You'll see people love Casper mattresses. They're highly rated, and they're far less expensive than mattresses that you can buy at the department store. I mean, you could pay $2,000-$3,000 for a nice bed. And the Casper mattress, $500 for a twin. You can get a king for $950. So far less expensive than department store beds. You can learn more and order one at casper.com/cultcast. And if you like what you see, or you want to try the bed for a free trial, you can order one and use code CULTCAST at checkout. You'll save $50 on any mattress purchase. That's casper.com/cultcast. And the code to use is CULTCAST at checkout to get $50 towards any bed. All right, let's talk about iPads, and then let's move on to apps here, since we're running
out of time. What about the Pixel phone? Because I kind of want to ask Buster and you also what you thought of it.
Total shite.
Oh, yeah, really. I wasn't even going to mention it for that reason, Leander.
I mean, it looks a lot like the 6S and 6. It's not waterproof. The processor's way slower. It has more RAM than the iPhone. I don't know. I didn't think it looked that great, other than what if about you really like Android.
Right, and you know, but they're pitching it as, you know, like this is their flagship Android phone, right?
Yeah,
and it's a very Apple-like in their pitch. They're now taking control of hardware and software. In fact, that whole presentation was kind of weird, wasn't it? Because it was all about Apple, basically.
Yeah, it was amazing. Even how the many presentation times they itself
was very Apple-inspired.
Yeah, it was funny, but.
And this is the third time they've tried this, and they had all this BS, you know, like features, you know, a couple of publications wrote stories about it and saying that, you know, oh yeah, you know, this is the first time that Google's going to go against the iPhone, but this of course is the third time, isn't it?
Right,
third time's a charm.
I mean, they're just basically. I mean, they did this with the Nexus thing, only this time they said they've built this phone from the ground up themselves, whereas in the past it was like the company would build it 90%, and then they tweak it a little bit. I don't know.
It's
super expensive too. It's like it's the same price as iPhone, only it has fewer features.
It is?
Yeah.
It's iPhone pricing. Yeah.
No, thank you, ma'am.
Right. It's like
if you're gonna release a phone that's the same price as the iPhone, it needs to be toe to toe with the iPhone in all regards, especially when it comes to speed.
Yeah, I would take a Galaxy S7 or a Note 7 before I bought the Google phone.
Yeah.
And those have way more features than that Google phone and cost as much.
I think the only thing that Pixel has going for it is Google is in charge of the hardware and software, so it'll probably be more polished in some ways. And then also you get to use a unskinned version of Android. When they come out with Android updates, you'll probably be able to have those pushed to your phone, so your phone will actually get updated, unlike most Android phones that are out there that just never get updated.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. That's the one major premium, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's a pretty big selling point right there, is that Google's got your back, right? And they're going to be updating and adding new features, just like Apple
does. Isn't it crazy that their ecosystem's like that? You know, you got to buy this expensive primo phone from Google themselves in order to like ensure that you get the latest and greatest software. You know, because it's so fragmented. I mean, what are the uptake? What's the uptake for Nougat? It's really low, isn't it?
Yeah. For new versions of Android?
Yeah.
I think it's below 10%.
It's anemic.
Yeah,
because once Samsung sells you a phone, I mean, first of all, think how many versions of Android phones they have out there, right? It's impossible for them to keep all of them updated, especially because they're all skinned. And so what's their motivation once they've sold you a phone to update it? You know, like they have no motivation to do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, they should do, really. You know, like Apple, they should take care of the installed base. But
yeah, but Apple has like, what, 7 devices they have to update for at any one time?
Right.
And Samsung probably has 13 or 14,000.
Right.
So I agree with you. I think it would be nice if they did that. And that's obviously one of the major benefits of iOS, is that you know you're getting new features whenever Apple releases a new version of iOS, which is every year. You get like a bunch of new stuff on your phone, which is great. Who else does that? I don't think anyone else does.
What about the camera? What did you make? You know, they're claiming that the camera, according to that one particular benchmark, is the best in a smartphone, which I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was very skeptical of that.
So some people, I saw on some forums, people saying that the DxO Mark, the way that they judge smartphones isn't the same way they judge a regular camera. They take the images and they compress them down to, I think, 8 megabytes or something, or 8 megapixels, and they only judge a couple different criteria. I'm going to hold off to see other sites reviewing it, you know, first before seeing if it's the best camera ever.
Yeah, you can't just go by DxO, because DxO is one measure of image quality. And I think there's more to a camera than just that.
What exactly is DxO? Why are they being cited as a...
I don't know. DxO Mark is a part of DxO, and DxO, they make this little camera that you attach to the iPhone. I don't know too much about DxO Mark or people that use that for like scoring.
Yeah, I don't know why they've become the de facto either. Maybe it's just because they keep doing it.
Maybe.
Have they though? Or is it just because they gave Google a good mark? So.
I think, well, that's exactly. I mean, they didn't give anybody else a loaner to test it out with first. So, or if they did, they're only publishing DxO Mark's score because they gave them the best one.
if you give out an award for long enough or you rate stuff for long enough, eventually people just be like, oh, this guy clearly is the person to go to for this type of information. It's like Time Magazine's Person of the Year. It's right, like, why does Time Magazine get to decide that, right? Because they've been doing it for 100 years. So you're like, all right, cool. They know more than I do, I guess. And so you start to look to them for that type of information. So I don't know why DxO Mark is considered the benchmark to go to either, but
when you
people
look at
are always quoting them.
Their top five, it's like the HTC 10, the Galaxy S7, and the Sony Xperia, and the Force Droid, and the S6. All of them score above the iPhone 7 and 7 Plus. So I don't believe that.
Well, the other thing as well is it works with that, what's it called? The home viewer? What was it called?
Home viewer.
The 3D VR.
Oh, the
mask.
Daydream.
Daydream, right.
But the thing is, you're going to have to buy the XL one because that has quad HD. The smaller one, I think VR will look crappy on it because it's like a 1080p display.
I didn't even hear anything about the Daydreamer.
Oh,
what is
you
it?
Didn't see that? They have these hipster headsets. They're like made out of like hipster felt cloth and other fabrics. And it's a VR headset like the Oculus, only it's supposed to just look a little less nerdy. But dude, putting big giant goggles on your head, you're going to look nerdy, you know? Like, no matter
you
what.
You say that now, but wait, in 10 years, it's going to be the new hotness. People are going to be walking around with those hanging around their necks like beads.
All night and day. You'll never take it off.
Okay, let's talk about iPads real quickly before we wrap up with apps. So, according to a new report, we are going to get a trifecta of iPad Pro models coming in Q1 of 2017. I know that sounds like it's really far away, but we're just talking about, three, 4 months from now?
Yeah.
January, February, March. Well, more than that, huh? Yeah. Like 5 months from now. And this is Mako Takara, and they're saying that we're going to get a 12.9-inch Pro, a 9.7-inch Pro, and a 7.9-inch Pro. And we were thinking that maybe Apple was going to replace or just get rid of the iPad mini altogether. But this kind of makes sense. If you beef them up, you give them 12 megapixel cameras, you give them True Tone flashes, and these ones are supposed to receive quad microphones.
Oh,
so you'll sound even better than you already do.
Well, that's going to be for Siri. Right.
Maybe.
That's okay, and it'll have a 3.5-millimeter headphone
jack.
There you go. That just pisses me off because it's just inconsistency by Apple, you know? Like, make a choice. You know, Tim Cook saying, we see what the future is and we're going towards it aggressively. Okay, well, aren't you going to kill the headphone jack from the iPad lineup then, too? No.
Just you would think that they would do this, yeah. But I mean, one of the things that Tim Cook said about the headphone jack in some of his interviews was just that the only thing it was used for was listening to music, and the iPhone needed the space for them to expand with new technologies. And so the iPad is larger, the Mac is larger, so maybe they are not going to get rid of the headphone jack on those products simply because they don't need to, whereas they did for the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Although it would be a little weird. I agree with you. It's inconsistent for them to do one gadget and not roll those changes out across all their other devices.
Right.
It would be like if they released the new MacBook Pros and put, you know, regular USB, you know, Thunderbolt, and all the other stuff I actually want.
Ethernet.
Instead of just doing USB-C, which is probably what they're going to do, and getting rid of the best Apple invention ever made, the MagSafe adapter, which I don't want to see go, and I will cry when it does, you know, for some lame USB-C port. But alas, it looks like we're going to be getting those changes in the early spring. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I wonder if I would buy a new iPad when they come out. And I probably will, because my iPad at that point will be, I don't know, 3 years old. And I can see why people just don't buy iPads that often, right? Because all I do is use it for Reddit. All the only thing I use my iPad for is to read Reddit and then maybe watch an occasional movie. And it's already so good at that. There's really nothing else. There's no reason for me to upgrade. So I can see why people don't upgrade their iPads very often. There's just no need.
I really like my iPad Pro.
Are you doing anything on it that you weren't doing on your other iPad?
I edit photos on it and movies. videos.
Okay. You got an Apple Pencil?
Yeah, I have an Apple Pencil. I like it for like dodging and burning and like Snapseed and doing like other brush
cards. Cool. So you are using it for editing?
Yeah, for a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
So yeah, I mean, I do like the iPad Pro a lot, and I use it a lot for blogging. I have a keyboard case for it, and I'll just take it to the coffee shop and work for a bit, and it's a lot easier than carrying a MacBook. So I actually super dig it. The biggest problem is apps. And so I'm wondering if maybe this, you know, early next year release will coincide with like a iOS 10.3 release or something that brings a lot of productivity features to the iPad. Because that's really I really do think the software is what's holding it back more than anything. Like everything's there hardware wise.
What do you mean the software? Do you mean like iOS? Like
yeah.
It's not.
Dude, I mean, it's just such a pain in the butt to work in iOS instead of like on your Mac. Like even, you know, simple things like I want to download a song from the internet and, you know, put it and edit it. Or if I want to make a GIF from a random video, it's just so much harder to get those files.
So what you're saying then, I think, is you want a hybrid of Mac OS Sierra.
No, I just think there should be some easy... There's just some things that you need to be able to do, like clicking on a file, like being like able to option click or something, like 3D touching on a link or something to save it, and also having... I do think there needs to be some type of file system or something where you can...
I was just going
to
say that.
A folder where you can view all your files that you've downloaded and stuff as well. Because otherwise you have to put them in certain apps and then import it to another app. And then you're just jumping app to app to app with a file instead of just having it in one central location, you know?
Right. It's not a good way of work.
No, it's horrible.
I hear you, man. I hear you. They just need to release like the iPad Pro edition of Mac OS Sierra.
Yeah. Touch enabled,
right? That's what we need. We need to Mac OSify iOS, and not the other way around. Okay, well, let's wrap up with some app chat, man. I've got some apps this week. Buster or Leander, did you have a chance to pick something, or am I picking on your behalf?
Well, you know, I was going to say a couple of the two things. I was really sick last week, so I didn't really have a chance to do anything. But I was kind of off the grid. But you know, the only two apps I downloaded last week were Allo, the Google Allo app, and this other one called Mezi, which is like it's a smart shopping assistant. Mm-hmm. It's for AI, and you tell it, it's like a chat interface. So you say, "Hey, I'm looking for this," and then it comes back and gives you some options.
I think Alex Heath talked about that one time.
Did he? Did he like it?
I just remember seeing a report that he wrote on it.
It probably wasn't cool enough for him.
But yeah, he said it was super interesting. Yeah, you just tell it what you want and it can go fetch it for you, like even random stuff.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, I asked if it was, I said I was looking for some Pilot pen refills. Pilot of the things. I don't even know why I said that.
Very specific.
I'm not really looking for Pilot pen refills. Actually, I was. I had this pen I like and it needed a refill. So I was like, okay, I'll try that. Which is like the most, they cost about $3 and you can pick them up at, you know, any sort of corner store. Or Staples or Office Depot, but it took about 3 hours. It said, "Okay, let me think about it," and then it took about 3 hours, and it came back with like 3 or 4 different options.
Right? So much more convenient than typing a ballpoint pen into Amazon.
Right. So I you know, it's kind of ridiculous. I haven't really looked into it, like what it is good for. And I kind of find it the whole shopping thing. You know, like I suspect you're like me. You know, you usually want something specific. You read reviews, right? And you hear about something, like you know, say the new Fuji camera, right? The X2.
Yeah.
And like, you know, if you want to go and get, I'm not going to ask some smart, intelligent, you know, AI chatbot thing to go buy me an X2.
Exactly.
You know, I'm going to spend weeks poring over it.
I don't even want it to order
and...
me a pizza. I do research just for that, right? I'm like, I'm certainly not going to do it for a freaking Fuji camera.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, you know, like I guess it's like if you, it's kind of hard to imagine the sort of, for someone like me anyway, the scenarios in which you'd use this thing.
It's for people that absolutely do not care about price or information. They just want convenience. And I don't know a lot of those people, right? Most of the people that listen to this show are probably into value, right? They want to know what they're getting. They want to read about it. And then they want to find the best vendor to sell them that product so they get the best price and not just have some piece of software or an Amazon Echo just order it for you willy-nilly without even giving you a price. It's like those Amazon dots, you know, like those buttons that you could put around your house. Yeah, and then like you just hit the button and Amazon sends you that thing. It's like, well, how much does the thing cost? How much of it am I getting? Well, can I get it cheaper from another vendor? You know, like I want to know that information.
Right. Yeah, that's funny because I ordered a couple of those and Tracy absolutely hated them, so she threw them like in a drawer. And then like, someone was going through the drawer the other day looking for a pair of scissors, and then like the next day, three boxes showed up of tissue paper and dishwasher soap and stuff like that. So I've got to like, he was hitting the buttons at random, so I've got to like disable those.
That's funny. Yeah, I don't know who uses those things. I would be.
What do you
I
would. You can customize them a little bit, you know, in the store. And this is stuff that we were kind of ordering anyway. And it is somewhat competitive, you know, like to the competing products. You know, the it's not outrageously more expensive or different, you know, from the other stuff you probably get from Amazon for those kind of goods anyway.
Well, what did you say the name of your app was, Lander?
Mezi, M-E-Z-I.
M-E-Z-I. I'm guessing it's free on the App Store.
Yeah.
Okay. All righty. Buster, what do you got?
I bought a cool iMessage sticker pack.
Ooh.
Oh, did you?
Hold on, I gotta go find it now, though. It's all these portraits of funny looking people from from medieval paintings.
Uh-huh.
I gotta go find it. Hold on.
I think iMessage stickers are gonna be a boon for Apple. I mean, I've already read that there's apps out there that have included sticker packs, and their businesses are growing incredibly fast because of it.
I really need to make my own because it's super easy to make one, apparently.
Is it?
Yeah. Like, you can make it without even having coding experience. You just make the image files, pretty much.
And then how do you turn it into an app that you can buy on the App Store?
It's super easy. I've seen a few guides online.
Dude, we should make a cult cast sticker pack.
Oh, I know. 99 cents, and, you know, like, we'll make billions.
Billions for sure. Yeah, absolutely. That would be really cool, actually.
Huh.
I think a couple people on Twitter asked me for the same thing, and I was kind of thinking about it when I heard about the iMessage sticker stuff, but I was like, I don't want to pay a developer like 10 grand to make this for me. but yeah, it would be really cool if we could do something like that. Okay, Buster, what do you got?
It's not a new app, but it's an app that I've started using a lot, and it's it's called Lightroom for Lightroom. iOS, you know, by Adobe.
Okay.
I used to think it was like really crappy for photo editing, but they've added with iOS 10, they added raw image support. I think they added like their dehaze tool to it as well, and you can shoot in raw on it. So it's been like my go-to app for photography the last couple weeks ever since iOS 10 came out, and so I don't know, I'm digging it a lot, I guess.
And what camera are you using for Instagram right now?
It matters.
I mean, there was one image recently that you had. It was the one where that guy was like, he was meditating.
Oh, his yoga pose. Yeah,
yoga pose, shirtless.
Yeah, and I mostly just used Lightroom for that.
Did you use your phone?
No, I used a little Sony RX100.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That really did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah. That little camera.
I mean,
awesome,
the
man.
Color range was impressive.
Yeah. I mean, it's awesome because now I bought like a iPad camera connection kit, and so I can just take my SD card straight from my camera, plug it in, import it, and edit the RAWs in Lightroom. I think before you used to have to like upload your files to the Adobe Creative Cloud and all this crap. It was kind of a hassle to get them on, but now it's like a really smooth process finally.
It does Lightroom cost anything?
I think it does. I think to get the raw support and like some of the new filter tweaks, you have to be a Creative Cloud subscriber, but you can try them for free for 30 days.
Are you a Creative Cloud subscriber?
I think so.
Oh, wow.
I don't think it's that expensive. Like if it's,
well, I think it's like
it's just a like Lightroom.
$20 per app or $10 for like the mobile apps or something, and then $50 for all the apps.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, it kind of adds up. All righty. Well, I'm going to pitch two because I think these are both so useful. You guys deserve to hear about
two.
Both. these are Mac apps. I'm going Mac apps. This is one I've talked about before, but it's one that I continue using and I haven't mentioned it in a long time. And it's called Omni Disk Sweeper. It's free.
Oh, yeah, I use that.
And if you have ever diminishing space on your Mac, right? If you take tons of photos, if you're using 4K video like I am on your iPhone 6S or now your iPhone 7, and you're using iCloud Photo Library, you are going to start running out of space on your Mac, and you're going to have to figure out ways to delete stuff. And have you ever asked yourself, like, what is taking up so much space on my Mac? OmniDiskSweeper answers that question in such a clear, concise way. You just select your hard drive, you hit sweep, and it will go through and it will start tabulating where all the data is being used on your Mac. And it shows you such a clear picture of exactly what's taking up space on your Mac, and you'll very easily be able to go through and delete the stuff that you don't want anymore. So I just used this and I cleaned up like, I don't even know, like 30 or 40 gigs worth of stuff on my Mac of stuff that I just didn't want anymore. Like I had no idea I had like 10 gigs of stuff in my downloads folder because I just download stuff and I never go in there and get rid of it. So it's just a cemetery of things that I've downloaded over like the past year. And so it's very good at showing you where the space is being taken and allowing you to delete it. And it's free. There's no reason for you not to try it. OmniDiskSweeper. The other app I'm going to PIMP is PasteBot. This is a new app. If you use TweetBot or CalcBot, these are made by the same developers. And this app is currently in beta, so it's free right now. It will probably end up costing some money eventually. But it gives you access to a copy and paste clipboard. So I love these things. It's one of the first things I install on my Mac when I redo the OS. And that is, you can bring up a menu that shows you a history of your copy and paste, or I guess of your copying. And so if there's something that you copied like 2 hours ago, or you know, like 100 copies ago, you can go through, recopy it back to your clipboard, and then paste it into any application that you're using. And if you copy and paste a lot like I do, this is an invaluable tool. And especially the fact that it's free right now, there's no reason not to try it. So if that sounds good to you, just Google PasteBot. I'll also include a link to all this stuff in the show notes, and you'll be pasting, copying and pasting like a PIMP, Buster.
Sweet.
PIMP. I mean, you're going to be like a pro. People are going to be impressed with your copy and pasting skills. And you'll be computing faster. And isn't ultimately that what we all want?
I guess. Yeah.
I think so. Thanks for backing
me up there.
I love
my time.
I think Leander was asleep.
Sorry, I got the Jets. It's Fleet Week here, and so the Blue Angels are flying
around. Is that
what's going on? Yeah, can you hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, what's going on? Al Qaeda got some Jets.
Are you in Syria right now?
All righty, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. Aren't we way over? Isn't that enough?
So long.
It's an hour.
Oh, can I just
get
a shout out for that sticker face pack? It's called Rejoinders.
Rejoinders?
Yeah, by Molly Young. It's kind of fun.
Okay, Rejoinders, and I'll put that
in the show notes. It's 99 cents, yeah.
99 cents for some sweet ass stickers. That's all the cool cats we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say what's up to us, we're on Twitter. I'm at AeroFlyingBusters, BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, I thought, oh wow.
Oh, hey, yo.
We start one right at the middle.
Buster, you ready?
Yes.
1, 2, 3. Wow, yeah, someone's is really off for me, too. I think it might be Buster's.
Sorry.
Let's just do one more. 1, 2, 3.
Why don't we just do the clap cast?
Let's just clap the whole thing and I'll release that. I wonder how long people would listen if we released that. Because one time I accidentally released the episode, and it was just my audio, not yours or Buster's.
Oh, really?
I have the audio files next to each other, so I uploaded the wrong one. And some people told me they listened for like 3 minutes before they realized there's something wrong with the audio file.
Well, I can totally believe that because the way you go on and on. Three Guilty. Minutes. I'm surprised it was that quick.
It's a long time to be listening to one person talk with absolutely right. no interaction. Especially when he's asking questions and stuff, and then he is quiet for like 30 seconds and then continues.
Huh, funny.
Pretty much just like listening to the regular show, I guess.
Yeah.